grasping the profundity of our own limitless potential, he pitched us two opportunities to work with him. One was a group coaching package where you'd gather in person a couple times a year, get phone support, email support, group cheerleading, etc., for $15,000. Then there was the big, fancy, no-nonsense, year-long package where you got to work with the master, one-on-one. This option was for those of us who were really not screwing around, who were ready to completely transform our financial realities, and who knew he was the right mentor to get us there. This was me. This was exactly what I needed. This cost $85,000. At the time, I'd already invested thousands of dollars in getting coaching. Private, group, anything, don't care what kind, just help me get past my shit. And every time it was a major, terrifying financial stretch for me. Yet every time I worked with the right coach, I got great results for a couple of reasons. First, because I'm an excellent coachee. I love to learn and challenge myself. I'm malleable, motivated once I make a decision, terrified of getting in trouble for not doing my work, etc. I also had officially reached my pain threshold for feeling at the mercy of money and had tasted enough little victories to know I could blow the roof off the sucker and go as big as I wanted with the right guidance. But $85,000? That was some serious cheddar. To even entertain the concept of someone like me getting my hands on that kind of money seemed impossible. As far-fetched as stopping by Saturn for a carton of milk on my way home. This was house-sized money. This was more than my annual income. This would get my friends to stop laughing at me and start intervening. Yet, because I just spent the past 3 days raising my frequency and my fist, and expanding my perception way beyond the limits of my present reality, I wasn't thinking about what a delusional freak this guy was. I was thinking about how I could come up with $85,000 extra. And the moment I switched how I was thinking, when I went from no way to there must be a way, in a flash, I suddenly realized what was perhaps the biggest obstacle that had been holding me back from making money for my entire life. There are a whole bunch of tricks that will help you unearth your deep-seated, money-repelling subconscious beliefs, and I'm going to start with the most powerful, which is this. Hurl yourself into the fire. Run face first towards your biggest fear. Take big, audacious action in the direction of your dreams and do not let the fact that you're wetting your pants stop you. For me, the combo of forking over such a gigantic chunk of change and the realization of just how big and visible I could and would get if I applied myself at this level, launched me into an alternate reality. The possibility of the money and the success felt really, really, really real for the first time, and it freaked the little prince right out of me. This is the feeling you're going for when you make a huge leap in your life, equal parts excitement and terror. And if you succeed at staying the course, one of the many glorious results can be that you'll freak your subconscious out so massively, remember, it's trying to keep you safely tucked away inside your comfort zone, that it will rise up, guns a-blazin', and reveal itself to you like a pheasant being startled out of a bush. This is exactly what happened to me. By thinking a thought I'd never thought before that was way outside my comfort zone, aka, I'm the kind of person who can manifest $85,000 for a coaching program and become gigantically successful. One of my deepest, darkest beliefs that was hidden at the very bottom of my subconscious appeared before me, all covered in slime and seaweed, clear as day. And it was this. If I became a financially successful woman, my adorable father, who worked his whole life to provide and care for me, would be crushed, defeated, and abandoned because I would no longer need him. As I waited in line to hand over my credit card and put down a deposit, I had an image of my sweet old dad standing there in his yellow V-neck sweater that he was never seen not wearing, staring down at his tennis shoes with his hands in his pockets, at a loss for what to do or say. Even though he wasn't supporting me, my father's favorite method of showing me love and feeling needed and valued was to give me money. And I realized that I subconsciously believed that if I got rich, I'd be rejecting his love and basically stabbing him in the heart. This realization was easily some of the most important information I've ever received in my life, aside from learning that Jeff Ramirez had a crush on me in ninth grade, too. Once in possession of my heartbreak over dear old dad, I was able to question, defuse, and rewrite my limiting subconscious belief and grow forth in grand new ways. Busting yourself, tip number one. Bum rush your fears. Figure out something you can do right now that will take you a giant step closer to your goal of getting rich. Make sure it's something scary. Something that you'd really rather not do because it's super uncomfy. Something that makes you feel like you might puke. For example, renting the massive space for your new handbag company, flying across the country and figuring out how to get yourself in front of the guy who's hiring for that engineering job that you're perfect for, cold calling 10 prospective clients, hiring a new full-time employee, etc. Notice any limiting subconscious beliefs that may get scared out of hiding as a result. And if you have anything come forth, write it down. Or, you know, have a meltdown. In public, like I did. I broke down into such an unraveled state of sobbing hysteria in the middle of this seminar that the only reason I survived was that I didn't want to spend my last days on Earth in Las Vegas. But afterward, I felt great. It was like hurling up something that really needed to leave my system. I felt lighter, relieved, like I'd been handed a permission slip to finally grow up. Once you've uncovered your heretofore unknown unhelpful belief, take the time to feel whatever feelings come up. I mean it. Pause, acknowledge, and let any sadness or frustration or heartache out of your system. Damn you, limiting subconscious belief. I spent half a century eating clam chowder from a can at home instead of dining at the fancy steakhouse because of you. Let your feelings rip, but don't hang out there for the rest of your life. Your little prince was trying to keep you alive and loved. So once you've had your temper tantrum, focus on where you're headed, not on resenting the past. Once you've discovered what's been holding you back and given yourself a chance to start releasing it, begin feeling into a new story using the specifics of what you've learned. For example, I visualized my father being so happy and proud of my financial success. I imagined myself telling him how much I love him, thanking him for being such an awesome role model, and felt him being relieved that I was able to take care of myself financially. Another thing that I did, and still do, is let him give me money. I'm so much more aware of how it lights him up, which then lights me up, and my newfound understanding of the energy in this exchange makes me receive the money with even more gratitude and love for my dad than I had when I actually needed it. He has no idea about any of this. Dad, are you listening to this? And that's not the point. This is all your stuff. These are the beliefs that you created yourself. It's about releasing the energy inside you, not about involving other people in your therapy session. Busting yourself, tip number two. Watch your mouth. If I say to you, you can't make money because you're a moron, it conjures up a thought and a feeling in you, just as you are awesome, infinitely powerful, and I love you, brings up a thought and a feeling too. Your thoughts are the superhighway to the spiritual world, which is where universal intelligence is hanging out, filing its nails, waiting for you to place an order. And since words and thoughts are total besties, they share everything, finish each other's sentences, back each other up, and pass information and emotions back and forth like secret notes in high school. If you're broke or not where you want to be financially, you can be sure that your language could use an upgrade. Just like taking massive action can call forth buried beliefs, so can noticing what falls out of your mouth. Words are great truffle pigs to uncover your hidden thoughts and beliefs about money. Luckily, the process of busting yourself on your words is pretty easy. You basically just have to make the decision to pay attention. Now that you've made the commitment to listen to this audiobook and figure out your money stuff, make the commitment to become aware of your language. Make this your mantra. Slow down and shut up. Get practiced at taking deep breaths before you speak. This will give you the space to stop, notice what was about to come out of your mouth, and course correct if needed. Paying attention to what other people say is another great trick, and, you know, kind of a good thing to do in general. It'll give you the chance to think, is that what I sound like? This is usually very enlightening because the people we hang out with most tend to share our own perceptions of reality, and hence, tend to verbalize the same beliefs about money that we do. Here are some phrases to watch for with others and yourself. I want, which equals I lack. I wish, but I'm not in control, which equals disempowering. I need, 'cause I ain't got, which equals lack. I can't, obv. I'm trying, but I'm not committed. I hope, might happen, might not, which equals lacks faith. I should, but maybe I won't, and maybe I don't wanna. I don't know, spoken as truth, slams door shut on finding out. Here are some excellent replacements. I have. I create. I'm grateful for. I enjoy. I can. I choose. I love. Additionally, two words we need to be particularly stealth about sniffing out are the words, I know. Nothing slams the door on further investigation and radical action faster than, yeah, I know it's important to be aware of my thoughts. No need to explain. Next topic. They're very sneaky words because we tend to think we're rather impressive for knowing things, when in reality, no matter how much we know, there are always more sides to the story, giant leaps of faith, and an infinite number of questions that could massively expand our awareness. Especially in the realm of self-helpery, where we often need to hear things over and over and over before they click, it's critical to stay wide-eyed and wondering. The other thing I know does is shut us off from receiving information from universal intelligence. When we're so convinced by and attached to what our brains are telling us, we lose out on receiving this much deeper knowledge. What we're basically doing is acting like we're smarter than universal intelligence, the stuff that created all that is in our infinite universe. Meanwhile, we can barely remember which day is trash day. Important I know note. You have clearance to use I know when used as a confirmation of awesomeness, as in, I know I can make buttloads of money. I know I am a badass motherfucker, etc. Which brings me to my next tip. Busting yourself tip number 3. Shut up even more. One of my favorite sayings is, a wise man once said nothing. I love this quote on so many levels because it reminds us that when we get silent, step out of the way, and listen to the big smarty pants known as our intuition and the universe, true wisdom can reach us and flow out of us. And that so much of what falls out of our mouths is about, look at me. I'm going to tell you 5 million awesome things about myself so that you will love me. I'm going to make fun of myself before anyone else can so I don't feel stupid type stuff. Words are powerful tools for connecting with our fellow humans, to share with them information, love, hilarity, ideas, chicken piccata recipes. The more you slow down and shut up, the better chance you have to make powerful choices and the more space you have to catch yourself in the moment and ask, why am I about to say this? One of the best ways to blast past the noise in our brains and discover what's going on underneath is through meditation. Sitting in purposeful silence. Even if it's just for 5 minutes a day, if you do it every damn day, it will make such a difference you won't believe you didn't sit down and shut up sooner. Set a timer. Sit in a comfortable position. Focus on your breathing. Notice what thoughts come in and gently push them back out by refocusing on your breathing. I highly recommend keeping a notebook nearby to write down any thoughts that come through that you want to remember and investigate further. Ask yourself a question about something you're struggling with before sitting down, like, what thoughts about money are blocking my flow? Another revealing exercise is visualization. Take 5 or 10 minutes to imagine yourself living out one of the specifics of your desire for riches. Let's say one of the reasons you want to be rich is so you can take your family on a trip to Madrid. Picture yourself there. Notice how it feels, how it smells, where you stay, what you see, eat, buy, yell at the cranky cab driver about. Imagine what other people think of you taking this trip. Stay in the feeling and notice if any gnarly beliefs come up. Anything about not deserving to travel, or being selfish, or people are in dire need all over the world, and you're spending your money whooping it up at the Museum of Ham? Write down anything that comes up and question it. Busting yourself tip number 4. Have an us talk with money. Whether you realize it or not, you're having a relationship with money. If you ain't got any money, it's because if you treated other people in your life with the same regard you treat money, you'd be dining on a Thanksgiving chicken for one every November. One of the best ways to find out how you truly feel about money is to write a letter to it as if it were a person. I personally found this exercise to be a real humdinger and have heard from clients and readers that they too realized they were acting like total Fruit Loops when it came to money. Back in the day, my letter to money went something along the lines of, "Dear Money, I love you and wish I had more of you, but I resent the crap out of needing you. You're never there for me. I totally don't trust you. I feel dirty admitting I want you, but I get so excited whenever you show up. I worry about you all the time. I wish I didn't need you. You suck. Please, for the love of God, show up in huge quantities soon." I had such a push-pull relationship with money, as do most people, it's a wonder I was able to bring in any at all. My energy was all about blocking it while trying to welcome it in at the same time. Here are some snippets of letters sent in by readers to show you that you are not alone in your money madness. "Dear Money, I feel confident and secure when you're here, and I like to spend you when you're around. I feel generous to others. But sometimes you leave without saying goodbye. You're like a lover who comes and goes on a whim. And yet, I always want you back. It makes me feel resentful and frustrated. I get so scared when you go because I'm afraid maybe you'll never come back. It makes me feel bad about myself. Why can't you just enjoy being together? Dear Money, I love you and respect you and try really hard to use you wisely, but I often feel like I let you down. Unless I work really hard, I don't feel I deserve to have more of you in my life. I know all the wonderful things that we can do together. Enjoy amazing vacations, bless my family, give to charities I believe in, and yet I often don't feel I deserve to have more of you in my life. Dear Money, I love you. And I'm scared of you. It would be amazing to have more of you, but I feel weird admitting that. Like it makes me a bad person somehow. I also don't know what I would do if I made tons of you. I feel like I would just give it all away because I don't know anything about investing. So I'm probably blocking you from showing up so I don't have to look stupid. Dear Money, I love having you around, and I want to keep you safe so you can help me if an emergency comes up in my life. But I'm afraid if I have too much of you, others may be resentful, or my husband will try to take you from me. I don't have an education or skill set that will pay me enough to have as much of you as I want. Dear Money, I really hate you. I hate that you have the ability to literally cause me physical pain when I look at bills. I hate that my stomach leaps into my throat whenever I look at my student loan balance. I hate that you have this much power over me. I actually would love to dedicate my life to helping people, but I feel beholden to take jobs that I dislike so I can make more of you. I wish that I could have a clean slate with you. I want to come from a place of abundance and not one of fear, anger, and regret. I heard a story about a monkey trap that's used in certain parts of Africa and India that's a great metaphor for how we choose to hold on to our limiting beliefs about money. What they do is take a box, put a hole in it, stick a banana inside the box, leave it where the monkey hangs out, and wait. When a monkey comes along and sees the box, he reaches in and grabs the banana and gets trapped because his fistful of banana is too big to pull out through the hole in the box. If he wants to be free, all he has to do is let go. And if he insists on holding on, he will be trapped. I can't remember where I first heard this story, but it's made the rounds in the personal development world for years, and I'm pretty sure it's total BS. First of all, how would the monkey know there's a banana in the box? And second, how do they catch him once he's sitting there, stuck, holding onto the banana? Do they hang around all day in the jungle, smoking cigarettes and playing cards, waiting for the monkey with their nets at the ready? I went to one website that suggested that when they saw the monkey, they quickly put him in a jar. A jar. Lame. I've decided to use this story anyway because, A, I could be wrong. It could be true. B, it illustrates a point I'm trying to make really well. C, the point I'm trying to make is that we make up these total BS stories, and all we have to do is let go of them if we want to change our lives and be free. So what better story to relate it to than one that also might be total BS? We choose to stay in our stories because we get what I call false benefits from them. We get to keep our identities as a broke person. We get to blame our brokenness on things outside ourselves. I don't have time. I have 7 kids. The economy sucks. I can't find a pen to write down my to-do list with. We don't have to push ourselves outside our comfort zones and risk failing, looking like an idiot, losing money, changing and becoming different from our family and friends. The list goes on, and it all comes down to this. You have to want your dreams more than you want your drama. As we embark here on busting you on your limiting beliefs, I want to caution you against getting so wrapped up in processing your blocks that you don't take the action necessary to change your life. I've seen many cases where people get so obsessed with their issues that they spend years journaling, going to retreats, weepily deconstructing their inner selves as an excuse not to take giant scary leaps forward. So I want to encourage you to do both at the same time. Investigate your BS and take forward action. I want to reiterate that taking huge, scary leaps into the unknown is the best way to scare your BS to the surface anyway. It's like a 2-for-1 deal. You make progress and you unearth your shit. The key is to keep moving forward when you uncover your deep-seated fears and beliefs, not retreat into endless self-analysis. I'm not proud to report that when I had my big breakthrough about my dad at the money seminar, I did exactly what I just told you not to do. I didn't take immediate action on getting the $85,000 together and moving forward with my goal. I shrank back and focused on all my old fear, doubts, and worries, instead of staying focused on how right this opportunity was for me. I hesitated. And instead of signing up and bravely leaping into the next chapter of my life, I snuck out of the conference room and went home. I'd love to blame it on the fact that it was an insane amount of money for me to come up with at the time, but it was my lack of determination and my fear that failed me, not the amount. I ended up manifesting that exact amount 1 year later to get coaching from someone else. This is such a key point. When you get a hit on what's holding you back and realize what you need to do, move forward. Act immediately. You are battling very deeply ingrained and up until this moment, extremely successful, limiting beliefs that have been your truths for your entire life. If you hesitate when you get a knowing hint, you give those familiar, limiting beliefs the time and space to take over again. Hesitation is the crack that all your favorite excuses will burst through, drown out your resolve, and sweep you back to the safety of your comfort zone. Listen to your intuition. Trust universal intelligence over your fears. Have faith that what you desire already exists. And leap like the mighty badass that you are. You can do it! To get rich. Suggested money mantra. Say it. Write it. Feel it. Own it. I love money because money is always here for me. 1. Write down the 5 most common limiting words or phrases you and the people you hang out with most use to talk about money. 2. Shut up, slow down, stop using them. 3. Meditate for at least 5 minutes every day. Before sitting down, ask the question, what belief is blocking me from making money? Write down any insights you get, question them, come up with a new story, and repeat it to yourself as described in the previous chapter. 4. Come up with 1 super exciting reason that you want to make money and spend 5 to 10 minutes visualizing all the details of it. Notice if any limiting beliefs come up, and if so, follow the drill in number 3. 5. Write a letter to money. Notice the key, most emotional limiting beliefs that come up for you, and do the rewrite drill for them too. 6. Listen to your intuition during meditation, visualization, or just running around being you. And the moment you get a brilliant idea that would move you in the direction of your financial dreams, jump on it. Go for it, like you've never gone for it before. Leap like the largest leaping leaper ever. Notice any crappy thoughts that come up while you're in midair and rewrite them, but do not stop your forward motion in order to do so. The successful completion of this one exercise could land you in full-on badassery. Just saying. Please fill in the blank. I'm grateful to money because... Chapter 5, The Hollering of Your Heart. I wrote the first You Are a Badass book while I was staying on a farm in Northern California. The deal was I could have the entire 17-acre paradise, complete with beautiful sunny house and views in all directions, if I took care of their horse and 2 goats. I'm a little scared of horses, and don't you need a special license or degree or something to take care of an animal that large? And knew nothing about goats other than that they can chew through cans. But I loved the place, and I love animals, and staying there ended up being one of my favorite chunks of time ever. I'd spend my days sitting on the couch in front of the giant windows, typing on my laptop while gazing out at Diablo Mountain. The goats spent their days sitting on the porch in front of the sliding glass door, gazing at me, waiting in vain to be let inside. Sometimes they'd get up and chase the horse around the yard or run full speed into each other's heads, but for the most part, they'd just glare at me with their weird goatly eyes, aggressively chewing their cud, insulted and unamused by their outdoor-only status. Every so often, when they just could not believe I still hadn't gotten up and invited them in, they'd take matters into their own hands and hurl themselves against the glass, or get up on their hind legs and pound it with their hooves. One day, while I was off in town shopping, I returned home after about 5 hours to find the horse standing in the driveway by himself. Although he was truly one of the biggest horses I'd ever laid eyes on, he was also one of the neediest, and was rarely, if ever, more than 20 feet away from his goats. "What are you doing out here all by yourself?" I asked him as I got out of the car, pausing to listen to the familiar sound of goat hooves banging against a glass door. My first thought was how strange it was that they'd be trying to get in when I wasn't home. They were equally as needy about me as the horse was about them. My second thought was, holy fucking shit. I realized they weren't trying to get in. They were trying to get out. In a slow motion sprint, I ran up to the house, let myself in, shoved the goats out, and did my best to shut and barricade the newly compromised door. I then proceeded to stand frozen with my hands over my mouth, uttering, "Oh my God," over and over and over as I took in the sight before me. It was like witnessing the aftermath of a particularly debauched fraternity party full of amateur drinkers. Epic, shocking, and so staggeringly horrible, you can't help but look even though you really don't want to. The goats had finally made the impossible dream come true by knocking the sliding glass door off its track and bursting through the screen, which subsequently closed on its own, trapping them inside with nothing else to do but completely destroy the place for 5 delirious hours. Their handiwork involved knocking over every single potted plant, smashing the planters and kicking dirt, planter, and plant debris in an impressively wide radius. They pulled the dish towel off the counter that I had glasses drying on, thereby shattering glass all over the place. Then there was the pooping and pissing party, which took place on every single piece of furniture and in every imaginable corner. They excreted their excrement on my bed, the white couch, the coffee table, the dining room table, the bench in the hallway, and inside my shower. There was such an incredible volume of urine, in fact, I imagined that they somehow must have waved the horse inside so he could get in on the fun too. For their grand finale, they hopped up and down and knocked nearly every single piece of artwork off the wall onto the floor. I mean, who thinks to do that? My first reaction was shock, but I have to admit, after that, I was pretty damn impressed. They really did a great, thorough job. We could all learn a thing or two from their tireless commitment to detail and the pride they so clearly took in their work. Here are some secrets to success that the goats modeled beautifully. Chewing, kicking, stampeding through any obstacles in their paths. Poo-pooing the rules. Dreaming, bigger than goats are told they can dream. Never taking no for an answer. Following their hearts no matter what. Not stopping until they reached their goal. It opened up a whole new world for them, literally and metaphorically. They transcended their outdoor farm animal status and became creatures who've experienced 1,000-thread-count sheets. They were forever changed. What this meant was that they became colossal pains in the ass and more destructive than any goat has ever been, which is saying something. Drunk with power on their victory and newfound mindset that anything they desire is possible, they broke through the gate and started terrorizing the neighborhood on a regular basis. They began jumping all over people's parked cars, tried to break and enter any sliding glass door they happened upon, tore down bird feeders, obliterated gardens, and chased after small dogs, all the while maniacally screaming, yelling, laughing, and pissing wherever they pleased, like a pair of carousing psychopaths. I quickly got the gate fixed, patched all the holes in the fence surrounding the property, and covered my car in giant slabs of plywood to keep them off it. But the horse and I never looked at the goats the same way again. We were both kinda in awe. Doubts, fears, and other people's rules are no match for a heart on a mission. In order to become rich, you must connect to your desire for money with the passion of a goat who wants in off the porch. And the key to doing this is by getting clear on the specifics around your why. Why do you desire this money? What will you spend it on? How will it feel to make it, spend it, and bask in the manifestation of your ever so important why? Just wanting to get rich isn't going to cut it. There has to be meaning behind the money, or else the second it gets hard or expensive or someone tells you you're high if you think you can get rich by selling your homemade ice cream, you'll slink back to your goat pen of complacency instead of doing whatever it takes. Start by thinking about what inspired you to listen to this audiobook. How is more money going to add value to your life? How will getting rich change who you're being in the world? Which of your gifts are you the most excited to share in exchange for money? Where do you feel you bring the most value to your fellow earthlings? How does it feel to share your biggest, badassiest self with others? If you're going to make more money, you need to get in touch with the emotions surrounding your incentive for making it, because emotions are what drive you to action. And if you're going to make the kind of money you've never made before, you're going to have to do a whole lot of stuff you ain't never done before, which will scare and challenge and excite the crap out of you. So you're going to want to be real fired up about getting rich and very clear about why it's so important to you. Here are the best ways to do that. Get real specific. The average person is barely motivated enough to scrape together what they need to make a living, with the occasional splurge on impractical, yet super cute, shoes thrown in here and there, let alone saddle up to bring in the kind of money that can change their entire perspective of the world they live in. For example, from a frustrating place of limitations to an oyster of awesomeness. Don't get me wrong, every single person has the ability, but you need to have a big, burning blaze of desire roaring away beneath your fanny if you're going to take the risks, make the mental shifts, and stay the course until you reach your new, sparkly financial reality. In order to inspire ourselves to make money, the exciting kind that we've never made before, we need to be excited about it. And because money on its own is a meaningless pile of paper and coins, you're going to want to get crystal clear about what the money is for, what it means to you, and how it makes you feel. This will be that fire for you. Vague aspirations lead to vague results. Specific aspirations lead to kicking ass. There are a couple reasons for this. 1. Specifics allow the universe to fulfill your order. You wouldn't go to a deli and order a sandwich by saying, "Hi, yes, I'd like a sandwich, please." You'd order the specific kind you want. Roast beef, mayo, no mustard, pickles, lettuce, tomato, on a roll, please. Actually, not that roll. Can I have that bigger roll over there? And you would, hence, receive the specific sandwich you ordered. And it would make you happy. The universe needs details, too. It will respond. It always responds. But if you just focus on how awesome it would be to make more money, you may receive 10 bucks instead of the tens of thousands that would make a significant change in your life. 2. Specifics create emotions, and emotions give us the no-nonsense determination to do whatever it takes to reach our goals. For example, feel into the different levels of emotional drive in the following scenarios. You're ready to get rich, and you decide to make an extra $50,000. You think about how exciting this will feel. Imagine your bank account with all those new zeros in it. Feel the power of being able to manifest that kind of cash and picture yourself doing victory laps around your house. While all of this is great, it doesn't have the same emotional charge as something more specific, like deciding to make $50,000 extra this year, 40 of which you'll use to make the renovations on your kitchen that you've been talking about for years. You've cut out pictures of awesome kitchens from various home design magazines and put them on a vision board that you look at every day. You've priced the entire project out down to the cost of the cabinet knobs. You imagine yourself joyfully cooking your ass off while surrounded by dear friends and family. You feel the space, smell the food, see yourself feeding the people you love, and you experience the satisfaction of knowing you created it because you can create anything. The other $10,000 you've decided you will give to your sister to help her launch her new dog grooming business. You love your sister, and seeing her overcome by joy that she can live her dream and that you have helped her makes you want to do cartwheels. Knowing you are the kind of person who has the means to help others gives deep meaning to your life. You want to feel so turned on by the thought of this money that you're leaping out of bed in the morning to the sound of trumpets, rather than slowly putting on your socks thinking, yeah, that would be cool. Here are some examples gathered from my readers that will hopefully help you get clear on your why. I love being rich because it makes me feel confident and powerful, knowing I did what it took to stop being broke and get rich. The more money you have, the more freedom you have with your time. I want to be able to let my nanny go and hang out with my kids more. I can contribute thousands of dollars a year to charities that help save animals. I can spend my money on going to the movies, buying clothes I love, going out for dinner, which I love to do more than anything, instead of having to use it just for bills, necessities, etc. I can buy great gifts for people and finally take my family to Portugal. I can see myself in the best possible light. I'm being the best version of myself. I've let myself be all I want to be. I'll be an inspiration to other women, like my daughters and women in struggle, specifically those who feel trapped in abusive relationships with men. I'll sleep peacefully at night knowing I'm in the black. Right now, I'm not sleeping so well due to stress. Early retirement. Woot! The other reason to fall in love with your desires for riches is because love is your greatest weapon against your limiting subconscious beliefs. Love is all-consuming. It muscles its way in front of all the other thoughts and emotions, including all the fear, doubt, and worry buried in your subconscious mind. Think about it. When you fall in love with a person, thoughts of them overpower everything else. Love is like a drug that alters your ability to participate in logical thinking, to focus on anything other than the object of your desire, or to have interesting conversations. I know. There are a lot of flies in this restaurant. Bob, the guy I'm in love with, had a fly in his house once. Same thing goes for when you fall in love with the specific reasons you want to get rich. Any coping mechanisms, complements of your limiting subconscious beliefs, that might try to keep you right where you are, will be no match for your burning desire for greatness. Any fears and beliefs that you'll become a sellout or a greedy fathead like your awful Aunt Sally will be drowned out by the harps and chirping of bluebirds taking up space in your head and your heart. We fall in love with very specific things and people, so getting mighty clear on the details of your impending richness is critical. Align with your truest you. After the goats raped and pillaged my home, it took me several days to get it back to normal. I also wound up spending $1,000 getting the hood of my brand new, thank you very much, Audi replaced after they kicked away the plywood and tap danced all over it. Yet, I couldn't get mad at them. Not only were they ridiculously cute, but they're goats. It's in their nature to destroy, to hop on things, to wake up in the morning and think, what shall we fuck with today? It would be like getting mad at my dog for barking at crows, or mad at my 90-year-old Italian father for refusing to eat anything but Italian food. Ever. 90 years of uninterrupted pasta. They're just being true to who they are. All living things come hardwired with certain traits and characteristics that are part of our nature, meaning that these things come naturally to us. They're what we're meant to do, and they're how universal intelligence flows through us best. Birds gotta fly, fish gotta swim, the guy next to me at the coffee shop right now gotta eat his granola with his fingers. When we push against who we naturally are, we feel stress. Things don't progress easily. We beat ourselves up for getting crappy results. Everything is an effort. This is why listening to what everyone else thinks you should be doing, including your scaredy cat self, is so deadly. You wind up trying to force your way through life, which can make sitting on your butt at a desk all day utterly exhausting if it's not what you want to do. Meanwhile, when you listen to your heart and connect with who you're meant to become, you have energy because you're in a state of flow. Things happen more easily. Opportunities land in your lap. You're turned on, inspired, engulfed in a sea of brilliant ideas. Yes, there will be challenges and things will blow up in your face, but learning experiences are different from wasting your life pushing a boulder up a hill. Pay attention to the things you're drawn to, the things you're good at, the things you lose yourself in, the things that make you stand up and say, "My foot! I can't feel my foot!" because you've been sitting in the same position for hours, totally engrossed. Allow yourself to be pulled by your heart instead of pushing your way through a thick fog of shoulds. So often we discredit the things that come naturally because we've bought into the idea that success needs to be difficult, or that if something comes easily to us, it must come easily to everyone, and therefore isn't worth pursuing in any serious sort of way. I have a friend who toiled away for years at a job as an advertising executive that he loathed. He's an old buddy of mine who is, among other things, a brilliant performer, pant-wettingly hilarious, and the main reason all my parties back in the day were so damn fun. He'd do things like wait by the front door and announce each new arrival through a bullhorn made out of a toilet paper roll. "Presenting Catherine Atkinson, of the once lived next door to Jen Atkinson's. Please make her feel welcome by complimenting her on her excellent posture." He'd organize impromptu talent shows, music jams, and have willing guests sit for him while he painted their portraits on crackers with spreadable cheese. Not surprisingly, he was constantly getting asked to help organize and host everything from bat mitzvahs to Thin Lizzy tribute nights. And while he enjoyed the work and did it well, at the same time, it was, you know, work. He believed, however, that he couldn't charge for this type of thing. First of all, he had fun doing it, which for some reason meant he couldn't get paid. Second of all, he felt weird asking for money from his friends. Lastly, he felt that anyone could herd people around an event and crack jokes on stage. What value did he bring? He went on for years basically working two jobs, the one he got paid for and hated, and the one he loved that made his eyes look like two piss holes in a snowbank from exhaustion. Then one fateful day, he saw a professional MC at some corporate advertising event he had to go to for work. The guy was not only getting paid, a lot, but he was nowhere near as hilarious, charming, or adored by the crowd as was my pal. I'm pleased to report that this guy was so profoundly bad and pissed my friend off so massively that he finally got over his attachment to can't, shouldn't, and wouldn't, and started charging for his brilliant MC services. He also asked everyone he worked for to spread the word about his new profession, and today is in high demand as a professional MC. By having the audacity to follow his heart instead of his fears, he was able to quit his hateful job and now spends his valuable time on Earth getting paid to be the life of the party. Your heart is the most powerful muscle in your body. Do what it says. Take a stand for the and. While taking this dictation from your heart and getting clear on your why, make sure you don't fall prey to the deadly either-or syndrome. Here's the deal. We live in a fear-based society that totally gets off on cautioning us, reminding us how difficult life is, on warning us how hard it is to make money, on holding us back lest we bite off more than we can chew, on screaming, "Look out!" instead of, "Rock on!" As a result, we've bought into this idea that it's better to limit ourselves than to stretch. And we've developed this fun-free either-or take on what's available to us. You're either doing what you love or making money. You're either a good person or a rich person. You can either help the world or you can help yourself. You can either go on vacation or pay your car loan. Yawn. Instead of looking to where you can cut back, save, and play it safe, look to how you can expand, grow, and start acting like a badass who's in control of your own life. Have a big fancy career and be a great mom. Be a good Christian and make tons of money. Travel the world and run your own business. Be at your desired weight and eat chicken wings. Get a timeshare and save for your old age. As you take the time to imagine your life as the biggest, boldest, and most authentic expression of the you that is you, don't be a cheapskate when it comes to taking inventory of what lights up your heart. Act as if you live in an abundant universe, which you do, and have the ability to create whatever financial reality you desire, which you can, and that by doing this, you'll be sharing the most magnificent version of yourself with the world, which you will. Open wide. I know I just spent a whole lot of time screaming about the importance of specifics, but you must also stay open to allow universal intelligence to deliver what you need. And the thing or person or opportunity that makes your heart sing may be in a different form than the one you were thinking. Once again, we must trust that the universe knows more than we do. And if we white-knuckle it over things like, "I see myself making $12,500 by selling 3 extra cars at my dealership this month," you will block the very same riches that the universe is trying to hand you via a film company renting out your showroom to use in a movie. Your job is to envision your life with all the specifics you can muster up so you can get all emotional and excited and take inspired action. Then you hand the rest over to the universe. Otherwise known as surrendering, this is a key factor in consciously managing your energy to create an awesome reality for yourself. Important note if you're in the "I don't know" camp. If you're like, "I have no freaking idea what my heart desires or what I want to do with my life other than I don't want to buy my groceries at the dollar store anymore," here are some things you can do right now. 1. Take action on what you do know. If there are bits and pieces that you're sure of, that feel totally right, focus on those instead of waiting until you've got the entire picture figured out. For example, if you know that you want the freedom of working for yourself, you love drawing, you're happiest when you're around animals, you want to help people, start with these pieces and act on them. You could volunteer at the local animal shelter and see who you meet and where that leads, or start a business making drawings of people's pets, or assist someone who helps people overcome trauma by working with horses. Once you start taking action, you'll be able to discover more things you like, more things you don't like, and a clearer picture of what you desire to do will begin to form. Taking action leads to answers. Mulling ideas around in your head forever leads to indecision and grouchiness. 2. Stop saying how clueless you are about what to do with your life. What you focus on, you create more of. And talk about how excited you are to be filling in the pieces. 3. Make sure you're not pretending you don't know what you want to do when you actually do know, but you're scared. I don't know is different from I can't make money doing what I love. I'm too old. People will think I'm an egomaniacal fathead for wanting to be a model, etc. Roll up your sleeves, study those who've gone before you, decide you're unavailable to live your one and only life, treating your dreams like they're not as important as your fears, demand of yourself that you figure it out and make it happen. We have, after all, figured out space travel and how to make jam out of a cactus. You can figure out how to flourish doing what you love. Don't waste your precious gifts and life drowning in doubt. Nobody else can want you to grow into your gloriousness for you. You have to be serious as a heart attack about creating an awesome life in order to crowbar yourself out of your comfort zone and make it happen. You've moved mountains before, I know you have, and it's because you really, really desired to be, do, and have whatever it was that you desired. Maybe you asked someone on a date who was out of your league, faced your fear of speaking in public, started your own business, gotten a job you were unqualified for, raised children, or moved across the country with nothing but $5 in your pocket, a thermos full of hot cocoa, and a dream. When your desire is strong enough, nothing will hold you back. So, how badly do you want to have all the riches required to live all the life you can live? Spend some time hanging out with your heart. Get clear on your almighty why. And let your fears know they ain't the boss of you. Success story. If she can do it, so can you. Here's an awesome story from a client of mine, Anita, 32, who got real specific, trusted universal intelligence, and put more faith in her why than in her are you freaking kidding me's, and manifested $75,000. I was thinking about where I wanted to take my life next, and I assumed that what I needed to do was quit my job and start a new and exciting chapter. It had been something I'd been thinking about for a long time. But every time I focused on that goal, it just didn't feel right. Finally, I realized that in order for me to be really ready to quit my job, I needed to close out some key household debts. Our mortgage was nearly paid off, and the car loan wasn't too bad, so I determined that if I could just pay off those two loans, I would feel okay with quitting my job, especially being the primary wage earner in our family. The sum of these debts was about $75,000. Okay, so now I have a goal to find $75,000. How the heck am I going to find $75,000? I thought, this is crazy. What gives me the right to expect that this is even possible? I'm not going to find a pile of money lying around, and I'm also not going to be able to take on another job or sell something that would earn that amount. I started feeling sort of silly and maybe not worthy about my goal. I felt stuck. After about a week of whining about it, I stopped the fear crap and started focusing on the number 75. I meditated on the number 75. I wrote 75s all over my journal. I believed that something would work out. And then, nothing was happening. Sheesh. I laid in bed one night and thought that there must be something I'm not seeing. There must be somewhere I haven't looked for the money. I reminded myself that all that I desire is already here, somewhere. And then I remembered that way back in 1999, I had received as a gift some stock for participating on an advisory board of a tech startup. Now that the company had gone public, I wondered what it was worth. The stock info was buried somewhere in our home office files, and, miraculously, I found the file easily the next morning. I did some research to find out whom to contact about these stock shares. I called the phone number of the management company to understand the value and how to sell them. I had no idea if they were worth anything, but I had to give it a try. The fund manager was extremely helpful and walked me through the process of selling the shares. I asked her what the value would be worth since it was a gift initially valued at about $200. And guess how much it was worth now? Are you ready for this? Yep, $75,000. On the freaking nose. I nearly dropped the phone when she told me.